Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Today on the show, we have Brian Campa. He's the managing principal at Shield Equity Group, a company that he founded in 2020 with the intention of an alternative way of investing and growing his wealth in a more controlled and familiar way. He joined Jake and Gino in an effort to realize that vision, and since August of 2021, he has added hundreds of units to his portfolio and has had opportunities to invest in businesses in the same market he invests in that will complement his real estate portfolio. Welcome to the show, Mr. Brian Campa.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, Gino. I really appreciate it.
Let's jump into the story. Why multifamily? What attracted you to the asset?
Well, what attracted me was initially my partner who is with me on Shield Equity Group. He actually said, hey, have you heard of Jake and Gino? So I said, I got to admit, you know, I hadn't heard of you or Jake before. So I had him send me over a copy of Wheelbarrow Profits. And I was convinced that that this was something that we could actually do together. Mm. At the time, I had a 3-unit property under contract, and I thought that was pretty much my ceiling, and I just could rinse and repeat that over years and over time and build slowly. So that was really the aha moment. My first aha moment with multifamily real estate was my partner giving me Wheelbarrow Profits.
And then what were you doing before? I know you live in LA. What was your W-2 job? And like I said, why multifamily? What, I mean, like I can see the rinse and repeat, but what attracted you initially to multifamily?
So I'll just back up just a little bit here to give you some context of who I am and where I came from. So my degree in college was facility and property management. So I was attracted to real estate in college. I wasn't particularly keen on the finance end of it. I couldn't wrap my mind sometimes around the spreadsheets. I just needed to be actively doing something in the building. And so facility and property management sort of filled that need for me. And it's a comprehensive education. You get exposure to the construction side of it, to the operation side of it, and also the leasing side of it. So it was a really great education to receive. And so coming out of college, of course, I started working in property and asset management, and I worked for boutique real estate companies. And I had managed a portfolio commercial property for a while. And then I started leveling up a little bit in my career, taking on more of an asset manager role for larger companies, publicly traded industrial companies, and sort of got exposed to that asset class. And so I never really considered multifamily as a vehicle for wealth creation until I started listening to more and more podcasts and getting more educated. And like I said, I thought my ceiling was the 1-4 because that's how much money I had. And that's how much money that you would need to put it down traditionally for financing it. And I thought that I needed to put it all down because I was the one that was going to be managing it. And multifamily really spoke to me because there's a scale component to that. So like I had mentioned, I had talked to my partner now and good friend. He actually graduated from that program that I spoke to. I've known Jesse for 15 years or so. So when he gave me that book, I knew that he wasn't just giving me something just for fun. Like he was really passionate about it too and wanted a vision, to sharing that vision with me. So as we got more educated in multifamily, it was very clear to us that there's an opportunity to scale, to create your wealth in a much more robust manner. And the one component that I really liked about it, Gino, that I learned from from working on the commercial side of things and other asset classes was this idea of forced depreciation. You know, these 1-4 units, as you're getting lending on them, it's, you know, in 2020, 2021, you could probably get a DSCR loan for those types of, you know, a traditional commercial loan product for 1-4. But for these, you know, you traditionally aren't going to get that, right? So this idea of forced appreciation, going in and creating your own value rather than looking at the house next door that sold for X price, I really like that idea because I can control that. And so when you couple the scale with I can control what kind of value that I'm creating to this property, to me, that was how I wanted my money to be controlled.
Let me ask you, Well, first of all, let me make an observation. Most of us don't know what we don't know. And most of us don't get into multifamily for where do I find the money? Well, there's creative financing. There's partnering up. There's syndications. There's so many ways to get into it. But I don't want to be a conspiracy person, but I think the educational system at times wants to dumb us down so we don't see these opportunities. So we continue to work as employees and not be the entrepreneurs. And if you're saying to yourself, I can only do 1 to 4s, that's all I'm going to qualify. Your behaviors are belief driven. If you believe that, you're not going to take the next step. And I commend you for getting educated. But before I ask you about the education component, do you remember specifically a time listening to a podcast or talking to Jesse or, you know, driving when you actually said to yourself, I think I can do this multifamily thing?
Yeah, I think it was, when we were about to join Jake and Gina, when the Real Barrel Profits Academy at that time, when we were thinking about joining that community in particular, is having conversations with people who were already in the community.
Yes. Yeah.
Their stories resonated with us because, you know, we felt like we were Joe Schmoes, and in a lot of respects, we still feel that way about ourselves.
Every morning, my friend, you can't shake it off. We're all Joe Schmoes.
Exactly. So, you know, it was such an eye opener to hear that this person who is in a completely different field as real estate, and here I am in real estate, you know, thinking that I can provide value. This person that I'm talking to, who was currently in a career outside of real estate, is scaling his portfolio in multifamily through partnerships. And I think that was my aha moment, was, okay, well, I don't have to do this alone. And it doesn't have to be just me and Jesse. You know, it can be whoever we want them to be if our goals are aligned.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at it, I love that observation. You're saying to yourself, I need to grow. And I think for all the parents out there who say to themselves, I don't want my kids going to college, or I hate college, there's a really special place for college. I commend you for going to school. That's an awesome degree. I wish I had a degree like that. I went for finance, but something specific like that in real estate is phenomenal. I think that's such a good use of your time and money when you're going and you're young. That's so important. But when you graduate, what's the difference between the education? What did Jake and Gino give to you? I saw the networking. I saw the ability to partner up. What else did you learn from the community that allowed you to say, I can do this, and it's helped me, you know, get into the business? Anything specific?
I think that I cannot stress the partners. I think when we joined Jake and Gino, I think that we assumed everyone was like us. We had, like, in other words, everyone wanted to do what we had envisioned our goals to be like. And everyone has different goals, but it doesn't mean that you can't be partners. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our partners early on, is particularly in our first deal, were individuals who really didn't want to find a deal. They had a lot of capital to deploy, but just didn't want to spend the time looking for a deal. And we had time, and we had a lot of zeal to look for a deal. And we knew that we were going to be invested in one particular market. So if these partners or prospective partners were interested in this market, well, hey, that's step one. That's a good foundation to work off of. And then it's just a matter of working off of that and getting to know each other and taking that step to partnering together.
That's important, Brian. Talk about goals, because most of us don't even think about what our goals are. How did you select your goals, and what did you come up with the goals? Did you want to leave your W-2 job to do this full time? Were you doing it? And this is for the listeners as well. Think about what your goals are. Are you trying to create some type of passive income so you can retire? Are you trying to build a portfolio where you can leave your W-2 job? Are you just doing this part time, wanting to get into it and see if you can make a run at it? What was your mindset at the time?
At the time, it was just like my bio says, it was just to create an alternative way of investing for my family and building wealth. I had a lot of money in 401ks and in stock market, none in real estate holdings. And it was ironic because here I am working in real estate for a decade and I'm not invested in the asset, in that asset, right? So for me, it was just taking a step back and saying, like, okay, well, where is my money going and how is it growing? I have two young boys. I'm married. I'm looking out for them at this point. You know, it's not necessarily about what I want to do with my money. It's with them in mind. So I think it's figuring out that why. And I know that's something that is really stressed in this community, is figure out what your why is. So, mm-hmm. I mean, why are you even joining this community? And I think if I were to take it a step further with goal setting, I think that for us, it was just how can we scale this to a point where we're not feeling overwhelmed? Well, we quickly found out that the sky's really the limit. If you're aligning yourselves and taking it day by day and you're being intentional with the time that you're spending in this space, mm-hmm. you'll be very surprised at how quickly things can develop in your favor.
Mm-hmm. Brian, it's important that you said that about the goals, because everyone has different goals and there is no one right strategy or solution. To some people, they want to raise capital and syndicate. That's awesome, especially in a certain part of the market cycle. It may work a little bit better. Some people just want to get into smaller deals and control it. Some people want to work just solely in their backyard. And for you, you're in California. That may be a little bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. How did you select the market? What did you say? It's hard to buy deals out here. I'm going to go outside my market. What was your mindset there? And how did you find the market that you wanted to ultimately invest in?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think our approach was, you know, the closer, the better. My partner lives in California as well. So we did not want to invest in California for a lot of reasons. So we looked at Phoenix, and this is right at the start of the pandemic. So it was already hot. And we felt like the barrier to entry there was probably not worth our personal effort. And we're just going to let the people who are currently working it just go ahead and let them continue to prospect there. But then it became like, okay, well, like, let's take a step back. Let's, right. So again, this idea of like, well, what are our goals? So our goals were to, like, proximity shouldn't be an issue. Like, you can invest anywhere as long as you have the right people and processes and systems in place mm-hmm. to care for these assets. Right. So we started taking the approach that we were taught, and this really comes into play with the knowledge and the education component of investing in multifamily real estate, is you really got to take a market research approach to the market that you want to invest in. Mm-hmm. And we followed all of the metrics that pointed us in the direction of the market that we're currently invested in. But we looked at things like employment growth, population growth, median income. Are people moving into the state generally, not just the metro? Are there diversities of employers? So there were lots of things in our market that checked all those boxes. And what we think was a kind of a jewel for us was they weren't at the top of all these lists, but they were like third and fourth and climbing, right? So there was a lot of potential for even more growth and opportunity there, we felt like.
Mm-hmm. I felt the same way, Brian. When I was living in New York and I was trying to invest in New York, it was challenging. I didn't like the tenant laws. I didn't like the cost basis of New York, the labor, all the regulations. Fortunately for me, Jake moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, and it checked a lot of those boxes. Very similar to what you're saying. It was below the radar. Now it's blown up because so many people from California are moving there and they're migrating from Nashville to Knoxville. But even so, very similar. It's not in the institution's radar. It's got good job growth, good population growth. Omaha, Nebraska is very similar to what Knoxville was 7 or 8 years ago. It's stable, steady, good employers, good place to live, good quality of living. The median income is actually pretty high there as well. And it's actually pretty cheap or less expensive to live. So you can actually have the ability to continue to raise rents. There's the ability to raise rents because the cost of living is a lot cheaper. And what markets did you end up selecting?
Yeah, so we initially selected Oklahoma City. And again, we were just very intentional. So we didn't want to stretch ourselves and trying to find deals in four different markets. So mm-hmm. we stuck to one market. We spent the time connecting with brokers, with lenders, with property management companies, all the players and strategic partners that you need to be successful in multifamily investing. And now that has expanded to Tulsa. So now we do Oklahoma City and Tulsa, and we are in a good position to, you know, to further that proximity, that radius as well, mm-hmm. moving forward.
And how did you find that first deal? Walk us through that first deal as far as the partners you found, the deal itself, why you liked the deal, when you bought it, any value adds to the deal?
Yeah, so the first deal, it was actually a marketed property. And we were scratching our heads because we thought that the property was probably a little bit too high of a price point. But it was a beautiful, beautiful property in arguably the wealthiest part of Oklahoma City, in a district of Oklahoma City. And so we were just scratching our heads like, well, what are we missing? If it's just the price, well, you know, we can always work on that with the broker. So we reached out to the broker, and I think that this is where the community and the education really comes into play, Gino, is I think you see, we could have potentially fallen into a really bad trap with overpaying. And we were really disciplined. The coaches helped us walk through this deal and helped us analyze it and be disciplined and make an offer on the property that made sense in the current market and what we felt like we could achieve on a pro forma.
You know, Brian, it's interesting when people are local to the market, they miss those opportunities. You know, it's really funny because sometimes people from California overpay because they're like, six caps or five caps, I can't get that in California. But it's very similar to what happened to me when I moved from New York to Jacksonville. A lot of the locals here missed the market because they didn't understand the population growth. They didn't understand the jobs, Amazon, healthcare, insurance, banking, all that were moving into this area, and they missed it. So when you looked at this deal, you fired on the buy right. So we have the three-step framework, buy right, finance right, manage right. So you took care of the buy right on the front end. How did you finance this deal?
So this was a traditional, you know, 75% loan to value. This owner, just to give you some context on the finance right, why we didn't spend a lot of money on a bridge loan or any CapEx, this owner was it was owned in a trust. And the trustee was a very well known and reputable developer. And they had owned this property in their trust for 40 years.
Wow.
And they were all at the age where they just wanted to cash out. But being a developer, he invested a lot of money into, and this was a historic building. So he invested a lot of money into creating a great environment for the residents there. So we weren't looking when we went to a lender for any CapEx or anything to be funded. We just made that as part of our pitch to our JV partners of maybe some extra money we need to have on the side to take care of XYZ. So this was a community bank that we knew we could leverage as much proceeds as possible, not just because of what the market was like in 2021 when this deal closed, but because they knew this property and they knew the value that it could potentially bring, right? And I think that that's where the value of community banks really come into play, is they know that they know this, these markets, they know their market, they know the communities that are doing well, that will perform well. And if they like you as an operator, it's amazing the kind of conversations you can have with them in terms of what they'll be willing to give you in terms of the terms.
So it sounds like the buy right box is you like the median income, you like the vintage of the property, you like the location. You're looking also at the value add components of it, but the good part of the market itself. Did I miss anything else on the buy rate? What else did you really like about this deal?
Well, having owned it for 40 years, it was paid off. I mean, the management wasn't poor, but it wasn't also to par, right? Like they could have performed much better. And they left the rents, there was a huge delta in what the market rents were and what they are currently getting on actuals. And they were self-managing to a degree, so it wasn't being managed super efficiently. And we felt like we could come in with our expertise and implement some KPIs to track and turn that property around in that way. So there was a huge opportunity to force that appreciation that interested me in multifamily investing in the first place.
And how many units was this deal?
This was a 29 unit property.
Perfect. A nice size for your first deal. It's not too big, and it's really not one of those deals where, oh, I got to go to Oklahoma to do a 10 unit deal. So it's like a sweet spot. It's like one of those perfect, amazing. Have you been able to reposition this property since 2021? Where is it? How is it right now?
Yeah, we're still on the original, with the original lender, still under the original loan terms. But we've stabilized it where we've been able to distribute almost $100,000 since 2021, just in cash flow distributions.
Wow, that's awesome. So
it's been a cash cow. I mean, it's I wish I could have 20 of these. I would be so happy.
Well, you will. Sooner you will. You know, it only starts with one, that first one. So after you take the first one down, how much time between the first and second deal eclipse?
So we actually, it was like a week after that, and that one was a little bit larger, And I think that this is also where the community really pays off, Gino, is this one was a significantly larger property. It was 130 units, but we were able to get this at a very low basis. And it was a property that we felt like if it could get into the right operator's hands, maybe a little more experienced hands, and we could still be part of that team, that it would kind of be a win-win for everyone. And so we leveraged someone in the community to take that over that property. And so and that happened a week after. So all of a sudden we got all this momentum. We're up to 159 units. But it took us probably 5 or 6 more months to do another deal about the same size as our first deal. And that's sort of been our niche, Gino, has been like this middle housing, like these 20 to 50 unit properties.
And Brian, I was going over our deals when we started out. Jake and I started looking at deals in 2011, zero deals. 2012, zero deals. 2013, it's our very first deal. And then in 2013, we had two deals. 2014, we did 136 units, big deal. We did two deals in 14. We did two deals in 2015. And you start stacking, right? The deals get bigger and the confidence. And I'm going to challenge everybody thinking that if Brian thought he could do 136 units on his first deal, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation because he didn't have the credibility. He didn't have the momentum. He could actually go to his JV partners in the Jake Gino community and say, hey, listen, I just did this awesome deal, this 29 units. This thing is already up and going. I've got the credibility. The broker sees that Brian and his team are closers. The community bank sees that as well. So it's a lot easier to do 100 plus units on your second deal when you've already got on the first deal. Now, if you're an expert and you've got tons of money and you think you can take 100 units down your first deal, we do have students who have done that. But don't let that hold you back thinking that you have to go so big on your first deal that you never take that chance. Remember, behaviors are belief driven. If you think you need to do 100 units, but you can't do it, but you think you need to do it, you're never going to get off the sidelines. What Brian did, what Jake and Gino did, and what a lot of the students in our community do is they get going and then they get good. If you never get going, how can you get good? We all want to get good before we get going. Well, it's those trials and tribulations of doing that 29 unit property and taking it over. Brian, if I'm listening to this right now and I'm considering and thinking about getting into multifamily, what would you say to the listener as far as where should I start? What are the next steps that I need to take to get into multifamily?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to take a page out of your playbook, Gino, but I mean, it's education and action, right? And I think that you can accumulate as much information as possible. And that was really my fear with getting the book Wheelbarrow Profits from Jesse was okay, well, this is great to like know and do, but like, if I can't see how this is going to get accomplished, then I'm just going to have it in my head forever and it won't do me any good, will it? So yeah, I think that to your point that the action is really the component, and it's okay to fail. Like, I think that if I'm giving one piece of advice for someone looking to get into multifamily, it's okay to stumble. No, even me as someone who had a real estate background, there were learning curves, certainly within multifamily, the asset class, that I just did not know about. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're staying conservative, as long as you're staying communicative to your partners it's all hands on deck, everyone is going to have the best interests and everyone's going to be willing to make this work no matter what it takes.
Two words: transparency and accountability. If you're transparent with everybody and you're accountable, and you will make mistakes, but you own up to those mistakes, people will respect you. And if you lose money, you'll get that money back. You'll find a way to make up for that mistake. And then in the next deal will work itself out. Brian, when you decided to leave the W-2 job and do this full time, what was that conversation with your wife? And do you have any kinds of suggestions for anybody out there who's on the cusp of doing that, or even has it in their mind, they have no idea what that looks like?
Yeah, it was, fortunately, my wife, I mean, she's very understanding, very loving, very supportive. And so she didn't want to do anything to get into the way of, first of all, what the goal was at the beginning of all of this whole journey was just to look out for our family. And that why never changed as we grew and as we became busier in the business and as we became, as we grew. And I think that, for me, I didn't need to replace my W-2, right? I made some preparations, and everyone's journey is different from stepping away from their W-2. But for me, it was, okay, well, I know I'm not going to replace all my income I was making my W-2 going full-time and in multifamily investing. But here's what I can do so that I can create a buffer. So if it takes 2 years for me, you know, 2 or 3 years to create the kind of income that I would expect from this work and from that conveyor belt that Bill Hamm talks about. I think that if you can make those preparations and have those conversations, it's going to set you up to be successful.
Yeah. And what did it feel like when you quit and you started doing this full time? What was that feeling like?
Honestly, it was terrifying.
I don't want you to lie. So.
No, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm doing something I never thought I'd be doing. And then it was like reality set in. It was like, okay, well, you're the keeper of your own estate here, right? You are the one that is responsible for how you are bringing in income. And I mean, but in the same token, like the highs are high and the lows are lows, Gino, and you probably know that better than anyone. And so
every day you're like you're riding the ocean and then the next moment you're falling off the surfboard. I'm like, bro, what just happened here? You know what I'm saying? Yes,
exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I think the key is just, you got to lean into that, right? You just got to, I think it's all about the journey. It's not necessarily getting to X amount of units. It's not about, it's not about achieving this much money. It's just about the freedom that it could potentially provide you and just embracing that journey of getting there and knowing that, you know, I don't make as much money, just candidly. I'm not making as much money as I was in my W-2 now. I mean, I have all my needs met though. And on top of that, I get to spend more time with my kids. And that's just things that you won't be able to take away from me 5 or 6 years down the road. My kids are little, right? They're 6 and 3. So they're going to have these memories with me when they were very little, of me just being around the home and, you know, stepping away from my desk to come play with them for 20 minutes because I can. And my work's not going to get interrupted for playing with them for 20 minutes.
I think Brian read The Psychology of Money, where money is just a result, number one. Number two, happiness is not derived just from money alone. It's derived from the autonomy that money provides you. Number three, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. So I'm sure that real estate professional status and doing this full time, he's going to get some nice tax benefits. So plan your exit. Make sure that when you're ready to exit, you've got some cost segregation, you've got some tax benefits going on. You've got some assets that are probably the equity is starting to matriculate, because in 2 years, we may be having this conversation and all of a sudden Brian says, I sold the property. I made $2 million in my deal. Well, I mean, let's see if he can make $2 million in a W-2. I don't know what his situation looks like, but that's what he's setting himself up for. And it doesn't matter what money you're making today. It's really all about the future. And as long as you can see the future and you're planning for the future, that's the important thing. And I think it's also, what's the word I would say? You're very responsible for not just quitting a W-2 job and saying, I'm going to burn the boats. You know, Julius Caesar told his warriors 2,000 years ago, we're burning the boats. You know why? Because we're going to fight. And if we fight, you ain't turning back. You either win or you die. So you don't need to do that in your W-2 journey. You can plan it out where you make just enough to pay your bills, but you're being responsible about it. And then as you have more time, you can do the side hustle. But when you have a time like Brian, where it's like, all right, my bills are met, I can focus on this full time. Now I'm focusing on this full time, I'm going to be able to create more equity for my property, more value. I'm going to be able to look for more deals, create more of those relationships. That's when I think it's you know, the time for you to take that next step. Would you like to add anything to that?
No, that's perfect. I think that just to, yeah, well, I'll just add just one little thing. In the preparation of exiting the W-2, I was very intentional about making those preparations. I spent probably 6 to 9 months getting the right people, meeting with the right CPA. I had been using the CPA for the last 5 or 6 years who didn't understand real estate professional status and didn't understand really how to cost segregate on my tax return. So yeah, I was actively looking for strategic partners. Again, this is a who, not how, right? Dan Sullivan. It's not about doing and figuring all this stuff out on your own. It's about aligning yourselves with the right people that can help you be successful. And that's how I approached exiting the W-2.
Love that. What's the future look like for Brian Campa and his team?
Well, we've been really fortunate to meet a lot of great people in Oklahoma who are based in Oklahoma. And
Time out. You're not fortunate. Remember, I mean, like, people think that they're lucky and they're fortunate. You joined a community almost 3 years ago during the pandemic with a property management position, and you don't have any money in real estate. You work your butt off. You go to these events, you network, you start putting in the deals. I didn't ask you this question, but your family thinks you're nuts. You buy a 29 unit. Then 3 weeks later, you find the audacity and the strength and the courage to ask people to invest in 134 units. So people may call it fortune, and God looks down upon us favorably. Fortune favors the bold. You took action, but you were educated. You didn't go out there mindlessly like a chicken without a head and just start trying to take action. You actually prepared yourself, like the exit from the job. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that just, I don't use the word triggered, but I think a lot of our students say, well, this deal fell in my lap, or I found this. Nothing falls in your lap. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of practice, a lot of preparation. Somebody said preparation creates precision. I think that's what ends up happening with a lot of the students in the community. Those that are successful, they continue to work their craft. They continue to show up to the events. They put in the time, they put in the hours. And then when they go to these markets, they're like, oh, I'm prepared. I can speak to a broker eloquently. I can close a deal. That person wants to work with me. So carry on, please.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I appreciate that. That's a mindset thing that I'm still working through. You know, it's just, I can't believe some of the relationships we've met, right? You work so hard in a W-2 and you have so many expectations for how your life's supposed to look and it doesn't. You start associating your work ethic with non-results or results, right? And so sometimes it's hard to get out of that mindset. But yeah, I think that there's one partner in particular, Gino, that we've met that has helped us really scale on the operations side. And this is that manage right component of the framework. And that first property that we bought, we had a third party property management company come in, and they did not perform to what we were expecting it to perform like. So we were really looking for an opportunity to self-manage, and we met this partner in the market just through a broker relationship. And we started really developing a great relationship with her. And she was someone that aligned with our values. We had the same goals. We wanted to create a property management company. So we had her come in our self-managing entity while she could get experience to create her own third party and take on third party contracts. And not only is it providing an opportunity for us to, you know, have a sort of a vertically integrated approach to our real estate holdings, but, you know, as an investor in her company, this is now, I've created another revenue stream for myself and for my family because of our investment in that company. So it's, those are the synergies that we're trying to look at right now. In our, when you say the future of Shield and Brian, like those are the sort of the things that I'm looking at, service industries that can provide and support our real estate holdings. And
wow.
So that we can take those proceeds and throw them into more JVs and multifamily.
Yeah. So I really have to reiterate this. We say, Jake and Gino, it only takes one. It only takes one deal. It only takes one partner, as Brian says. It only takes one mentorship community. From myself, I met my partner, Mike. It only took one partner to be able to scale without having to go out and raise money. That one deal, whatever it is, don't let that hold you back. Continue to work and continue to hold on it. And I think one thing that Brian does really well, he understands what he's looking to achieve. He doesn't have lack of momentum because he has clarity. We don't lack momentum. We lack the clarity. And when we have clarity and we have purpose and we have values-based decision-making, like he said, the third-party property management didn't align with his goals and his vision, he wasn't afraid to get rid of them. Sometimes we're afraid. So check your goals. Check what's going on in your situation and make sure that you're prepared. I think most of us in life, we're not afraid of change. We're afraid of not being prepared for the change. And it sounds as if Brian's been prepared throughout his entire journey and not just running into something without having his eyes open, but being prepared. And then when it's time to run, you're already prepared. You're ready to take a deal down. Things aren't going to go your way. You get going, then you get good. Brian, how can the listeners get a hold of you, my friend?
Yeah, they can reach out to me via email. I have no problem giving out my cell phone. My cell phone is 909-525-7263. Or you can email me at Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at shieldequitygroup.com. Or I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all the socials.
I really want to thank you for being on the show, because this has been an awesome testimonial. There is no one way to do real estate right. I mean, really think about what your situation is, what your goals are, what your capacity is, but don't sit there and make excuses and think multifamily is a pie in the sky that I got to buy 1 to 3 units. Don't be like the Brian and the Gino of not knowing. Get off your butt, join a mentorship community. Go to jakeandgino.com/apply. See how it looks like to work with a community that's closed over 70,000 units, that's done over $4 billion in deals, that's raised over $400 million. Get into those rooms where other people are doing it so you can say, wow, I didn't know you could do it that way. And just open up your mind. Brian Campa, thanks for being on the show, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gino. It was a lot of fun.